J.T. Crowley is Talking Books. On the show, you'll hear from emerging talent and seasoned veterans from around the world.
Hello, and welcome to Talking Books. I'm the host, J.T. Crowley, and today I have on the show Linda Dukes from North Yorkshire in the United Kingdom. She's here to talk about her book, Land of Opportunity. It's a book that is about a character, Rose Watson. She's 16 and she's a girl born in North Yorkshire whose life has changed after the death of her mother. It's a journey of escape, everybody, from a male-dominated farming community to New York, a totally different lifestyle. It's a book, it's a journey of escapism and absolute intrigue. It really is fascinating. And Linda has done an awful lot of research into the storyline to make sure that there is real authenticity to this story. So the best person to tell us all about the book is Linda herself. So I'm going to say, Linda, come and join me to talk about your book.
Hello, John. Thank you for inviting me.
Oh, it's a huge pleasure. And you know what, everybody? We've had a lot of fun putting this together.
We have.
Absolutely. Fun, laughter. And she's from North Yorkshire, everybody. North Yorkshire. And she likes her tea. Ugh. Anyway, Linda, before we open the book, would you care to tell the audience and the listeners who you are and why you wrote this book?
Well, I'm Linda Dukes. I'm an author now, much to my amazement. The book was written during the terrible COVID time, and I'm a member of the writers group in Stockton called Stockton Scribblers. And we all went on Zoom, and Joan Opie is our tutor, and she sets us little short notes for the following week of ideas of how, of what to write. And it was from one of those ideas that I put together a short story about Rose. And it ended where she was literally on board ship, looking back at England and thinking, will I ever see home again? And I went, the end, finished. But this short story turned out to be a novel because they all said to me, well, what's next? What's going to happen? Don't leave me there. And it turned out to be a novel. And of course, with doing that, I suddenly realised that I couldn't just write it. I had to do quite a lot of research. And it reminded me of my old school days, going back a bit now. But of course, I remembered Ellis Island. And so I did a lot of research into that. And of course, as the book proceeded, there was more research to be done.
There was, everybody. And there are 65 chapters to this phenomenal, amazing book, everybody. Now, we're not going to go into all 65 chapters because Linda and I will be here forever and a day and you'll be listening forever and a day. And that's not the idea. The idea is that we've, you know, picked some chapters to talk about, to emphasize what the book is about. And then you can form your own opinions to whether you like the book and want to inquire further. So you can go and buy it, or you can go and head to her wonderful new webpage, www.lindadukes.com. And you find a lot more about her there and her books. But let's open the book and let's see what this storyline is all about. So we're going to go to chapter one. And this, Rose is 16. The year is 1897. And the opening scene is on a rural farm in bleak North Yorkshire. Rose is in a compromising situation, but she has an escape plan. So Linda, would you care to tell the audience why you have opened the book like this and why Rose Watson as one of the main characters?
Well, Rose Watson was just a name that popped into my head for the story. But I do like writing in the Victorian era. It's a favourite time of mine. And in some ways, Not quite like my parents, but it reminded me, I suppose, of the farming days, and life was hard. And I suppose I just started from there, and I wanted a young girl, that was brave, but also naive in some ways, and who had a hard life, but then she had friends, but she wasn't allowed to see them very often. And she eventually realized that she had to get away from this terrible life. That was the start of her journey. And she got away on what was called in those days a milk float. Her friend's father managed to get her on, and he took her to Pickering, because of course there was a train through those days. And she got herself to Liverpool, to Hull, and then to Liverpool. And it was She met people on the way who she found actually were extremely kind, because she hadn't had a lot of kindness in her young life after losing her mother. And she was quite overwhelmed by their kindness and helping her to escape. And she met a lady on the train, and of course it was the first time in her life that she'd ever seen a train. I call it the metal monster. As it came steaming into the station, poor girl, and she wanted to just turn around and run away. She wasn't quite sure what it was going to do to her. But anyway, as I say, she got on and she got herself to Liverpool. And on her way, she met this elderly lady who was extremely kind, and she passed on a little bit of money at the end and things like that. And she found the help of a porter on the station. And she eventually got herself to the booking office, gave a different name, as you do in those days, because and told them that she was 18, and of course she wasn't, she was only 16, but she thought they wouldn't let her on board. And eventually she finds herself walking up the gangplank and getting on board, and she had enough money to get the third class on the boats, which meant she could share a cabin, which was, being a young girl, it was wise. And she met another young girl called Agnes, and she makes friends with Agnes. And it's, as I was explaining earlier, she went up on board when the whistle went and the gangplank came up and they were about to sail away. She went up with Agnes to look over the railings and to watch the crowds all waving. And it was at that awful moment when she thought she'd seen her brother, that he managed to get there, but he didn't see her. There were too many people. And yes, her life started, her new life, her new adventure started from there as it sailed away from England.
It did. So let's go to the new life. So let's go, Linda. Let's take the audience and the listeners to chapters 3 and 4. Now, in chapter 3, Rose and Agnes, Rose's new friend who shared her cabin on the boat coming across the Atlantic, they've arrived at Ellis Island. Now, Ellis Island, everybody, was the immigration island for New York, where you came on, when you went into America, you had to go through Ellis Island. It was the immigration island. So this is where the story starts. It's about the entry onto Ellis Island. And of course, there's a fire at the immigration place, a big fire. And it's also about the start again of her new life. And now there are many ups and downs for Rose in her life here, but she was saved by Thomas Blackwood, a very wealthy gentleman. And Agnes is a very colourful character herself. And when you look at the book, everybody, the characters are Agnes, they are Rose, they're Veronica, and there's Paul and Thomas. They are the main characters. So, Linda, tell us what's going on in chapters 3 and 4. We're at Ellis Island, New York City.
Yes. Well, they sail into New York, and of course, the first thing that they see is the Statue of Liberty. And Thomas, that she met on board ship, had told her about the Statue of Liberty and how magnificent she was, and it quite took their breath away when they saw her. And they, as you say, they arrived into Ellis Island. It took all day for them to get off this ship. It was night time by the time they got into the immigration building. And it was a terrible shock, really, to Rose. You know, she'd left this farm behind and the brutality there to somewhere where there were these poor people all pushed into pens. And as Agnes said, I feel like one of your cattle herding out to the market. And she was right. It was like that. And they managed eventually to get to the food table. They were absolutely starving. They managed to get to the food table. And they were glad of that. And they were given sort of bunk beds. I think they were 3-story high. For those that had come as far down as third class, they were treated a little bit better. And it was while she was sleeping that, of course, her friend woke her and the place was ablaze. I discovered this through research. It was just so happened that it was in that year that the building burnt down. And I thought, oh, that would be lovely for the story. That would be brilliant. And of course, they herded back out of this building and back onto the ship that they've just arrived on, poor things, with nothing apart from the clothes on their backs. And of course, Agnes makes the joke about, well, don't worry, Loverboy will come and save you. You know, don't be silly. And of course, they hear this shout of Rose Watson. And of course, Thomas has arrived because he stayed at one of the hotels and he'd heard about the fire and he felt he ought to come back and see if he could help the girls. And she said, oh, look, Loverboy has arrived. I see, I told you, she said. And he actually took pity on them and got them a carriage and he invited them back to his home. Now, Thomas, obviously, even on board ship, his eye was turned with Rose, even though she was quite sort of plainly dressed. She was a very beautiful girl. And his eye, he thought, you know, now she is nice. I'd like to get to know her more. So unbeknownst to Rose, he had already sort of fallen for Rose, really. He took them back to his home and she was met by the housekeeper, who obviously was a little bit, oh, hello, what's he done now sort of thing, because he was always helping those in need. And when they arrived, Rose was first introduced to his two children. They were very young at the time. I think they're 3 and 5 at the time. And they're very young. And the little one runs up to her father. And of course, he's cuddling. He said, I'll never leave you again, lovelies. And he introduces them. And they're very sweet of the children. And they have a meal that night. And the next morning, when Rose wakes, Agnes has already disappeared. Now, Agnes is much more forward, in so much as she's more outgoing and she's come to make a life for herself and she's going to make one come what may. And she'd already left. But Rose is more reserved. And she went down to the kitchen and she found the housekeeper there who, he explained that Agnes had gone out and was a little bit, she's a bit fast, this friend of yours. And having had breakfast, she advised her to go and rest. She said, you're tired, you need rest from the day before. And she went and had a look round the house and found the sitting room and the library and all those sort of places. And it was while she was in the sitting room and she was browsing the books and she realised that he liked the authors that she liked. And it was while she was browsing that she was suddenly aware that Thomas Blackwood was behind, was she heard him come in and he said, oh, you know, choose whatever book you like. If you can read, he made this sort of comment, which really made her bristle because she may have been a farmer's girl, but she wasn't illiterate. There was a moment of tension there until the housekeeper came in with the tea and said, what have you done now? So, yes, she got settled in with Thomas. And that evening, eventually, Agnes had come back and she'd already been out and she'd got herself a singing job. She'd gone to a place called the Casino Royale, which is quite prominent through the story. And she got a job there. And of course, she sort of, oh, I'm sorry, I should have told you, sort of thing. But of course, Agnes came back in new clothes. And at the Casino Royale, they have like a chest there where there's clothes for newcomers. And of course, she got herself nicely dressed, forgetting all about her friend Rose. And until later on, when Rose, well, where are your clothes from? She said, oh, I'm sorry, I should have thought of you. Anyway, she told her that she was leaving the next morning and she was going to the Casino Royale because they had apartments there and she was going to settle in with the dancers and what have you, which quite shocked Rose because she was still very much, well, what's going to happen to me, But over the times, Rose and Agnes, their friendship developed. Although, as I say, Agnes was very forward. Their friendship, because of their first journey, it developed over time. Yes.
It did. Let's fill you in a little bit here. So Thomas Blackwood, everybody. He's a very rich guy, and I believe he was a director of Macy's, the famous
Yes.
department store. That's where his wife
Yes.
had come from. And he's a widower because his wife has died. That's why the nannies are there. That's why Rose is there. And that's why the whole household is there. And Agnes, yes, she's a very colourful character, everybody. And she's off to the chorus lines. And she is very interesting. So we take it on. So, Linda, let's head off to chapters 9 and 10. And now we are now 6 months on. And that is the heading of the chapter. And in chapter 9, Agnes is enjoying the theatre life as a chorus girl. You give her a wealthy boyfriend, Paul. Now, Paul's an interesting character. He set Agnes up in a posh apartment overlooking 42nd Street, which I've already mentioned. And Rose and Thomas come to watch Agnes' show. It's just before Christmas. Thomas has doubts about Paul's character, whether it comes off or not. I initially had doubts about Paul, but he's not that bad. But Agnes and Paul, they lead different lives to Thomas and Rose. So without me waffling on any more, Linda, because you know more what's happening in your book, what's happening in this section of the book, chapters 9 and 10?
Well, yes, as you say, it is 6 months later. The girls have now settled down. Thomas Blackwood asked Rose to stay because she thought she would try and get a job as a maid somewhere else. But Thomas asked her to stay and become nanny to the two children because the children over these 6 months, the children had become quite fond of Rose, and Rose used to take would take them to the park, Morningside Park, and she would help them with their lessons and things like that. And she was quite happy, more than happy, to stay at the house. Yes, become almost like a housekeeper come nanny, which left Frieda, who was the housekeeper then. Really, Frieda was the cook, and so it gave her the freedom back to work and doing the kitchen. She was happier there than anywhere else. Agnes, of course, as you say, had developed a friendship with Paul Kelly. With Paul Kelly. Now, he is, as you say, quite a character. I did a lot of research for Paul Kelly. He's perhaps I can say he's not a tall man at all. In fact, he's much shorter than Agnes, but has very steely eyes. And he is one of the gangsters that Agnes draws Rose and the family into, because she does drag them unwittingly into the underworld, and the gangsters of that time. She's introduced to Monk Eastman, who is another gangster, which was at the Christmas do, and she's introduced to him. Now, Rose has also made friends with a boy called Jack, and unbeknownst to her, Jack is part of the Eastman gang, but she doesn't know that. Agnes is aware of it because of Paul Kelly, but she doesn't know whether she should tell her because she doesn't want her to think that she doesn't want her to have a friend. And she met Jack on the blue train. He worked on there, but also he did certain jobs for the gangsters as well. And things over time, things come to a light and they don't work well. But that is later on in the story.
It is, everyone. And this is just to show that this recording is live, everybody. And we get
Yes, I'm
the little
sorry.
hiccups. We get the little hiccups, and the author goes, "Where am I?" It's all part of the interview, everybody. It gives a bit of live character to it. Now, Linda, let's take the audience and the listeners off to chapters 21 and 22. Christmas and the long winter months have abated, with spring coming to the fore. Here we find Rose at Thomas Blackmore's house with his children. There's a new cook, Ivy. Rose misses Frida. Frida has died, everybody. And we then start to see a character coming. As I said, there's another main character, Veronica. Lady Carmichael, who's known as Veronica in the book. And she comes to Rose and she's talking because Rose is getting a bit bored now. And so Veronica is quite wealthy. She's married and she does a lot of charity work. And it's for the Young Women's Christian Association because Veronica is very much aware that young women who are coming on the boats are very vulnerable to the male society, the wrong male society in New York life. And she tries to steer them away from that lifestyle because it's not good. The ganglands are not what a young girl should be going into in New York City. So she's there to support these young vulnerable girls and avoid the pitfalls. So take us on a journey here, Linda, as to where you are going with this story in this part of the book, chapters 21 and 22.
Well, slightly correcting you, John. Rose wasn't bored, but she was rather depressed. She was saddened by previous events because, as we say, Frida is no longer with them. She has died. I won't say how. But it left Rose feeling quite, yes, it was quite vicious. And it's left Rose feeling quite bereft, lost, not sure what her life really is about, what's going to happen to her, has she done the right things? All these doubts are in her mind at the moment, but at the same time, she's trying to look after the children because it was a traumatic time for the family, not just for Rose, what previously happened. So she's trying to do that. And Veronica, who is an old friend of Thomas Blackwood's, her husband is a banker. And that is how, and with Macy's and the banker, that's how their lives met. And she tells Thomas, look, bring her, let her come to one of these charity meetings. And it's through Veronica, whose friendship is another one that develops over time, and they become great friends. She introduces Rose to this charitable group. It's a group that she's never heard of. She had no idea that they did this sort of thing. But when she went, they made her extremely polite and nice to her and very friendly towards her. And they encouraged her to be part of this association. And as you say, it was one where they literally go to Ellis Island when these ships come in, a lot of them from Ireland, and these ships come in, and these poor young women have come on their own, or they've come as mother and daughter, or as two sisters. And if they're not protected, if they're not grabbed literally and, taken in, they can disappear very quickly into the underworld. And I think we're all aware what happens to young girls in this underworld and with the gangsters. And the poverty, because the poverty was terrible in those days, and they would disappear. So, yes, it was a charitable organisation. And over time, Rose becomes deeply involved with this association. And it's something that gives her an interest in life as well as the Blackwood family. It gives her a meaning, and something to grab hold of, I think really is the world, is the word. And she feels that she's doing something important, and she's saving these young girls. And they said there is the teddy bear factory, called the teddy bear factory, and then of course there are the clothes factories. They do get an awful lot of far from the farming community, and there are farms where they take them to these farms, and there was a lot of research done on that. And there is a farm that is very good, and they take them. The girls are taken there, and they are well taken care of. There isn't a lot of money, but they are fed, they are clothed, they have sleeping quarters. They're warm. They do their work, but it's much better than what life would have been if they'd have just disappeared into the gangster worlds.
My grandmother and her sister were one of those, came from Ireland, third class on the boats, and emigrated to New York City. So I am fully aware of all about Ellis Island. So this is why I love this book, everybody, because I can see my grandmother and her sister there coming on the Ellis Island
It would
journey.
have been a terrible life, terrible time for them. You
Oh,
know,
yes.
they, yes, I mean, they thought they were escaping one problem, and actually they were arriving at something that, when I read about it, I think was far worse
It was.
for a lot
It
of
was.
them. Yes, and she has moments at Ellis Island where she's helping young people, and if they're ill or they felt that they were too old, they stuck them in a pen. Right, you're going back on the next ship. And you sort of think, wow, poor things, how terrible. You know, yeah. And
Yeah.
Rose wanted to make a difference. Because of what had previously happened, it was Rose's way of trying to make a difference to not just her life, but to these poor migrants that were arriving at Ellis Island. So it's certainly, it woke Rose up, maybe is the word. She grew up very quickly from this naive 16-year-old to suddenly seeing things that she had never seen before in her life. She grabbed the reins and she shook herself down, and she moved forward. And it shows that as it goes through the book.
And this is what the book is about, everybody. So
Yes.
let's go to chapter 34. Linda, we see that Rose has had a son, Tobias, and that Agnes has had a daughter. We are now January 1900. So Rose would be probably 1920, I think, if my maths is right.
Yes.
Life is moving on, as you said. Agnes has gone back to the theatre since her daughter's birth, and Rose has missed the work of the YWCA. Lady Carmichael, Veronica, has also moved on. You're moving these characters on here. And it's springtime. And they know what that is. It means the boats are coming back in again because, the Atlantic is not a safe place for crossings with those boats in those days in the winter. So spring has come. The boats are coming. The girls are coming. And they need to protect these girls, the new ones that are coming. So in this chapter, and in, it's really exciting. And in chapter 35, Robert MacGibbon appears on the scene from Scotland. And you talk about the RMS Louisiana arrives from Liverpool, bringing large, numbers of migrants to New York. Many Irish folk, fleeing poverty from Ireland. I'm intrigued as to who Robert is, and where are you taking the reader here, Linda, with this storyline? Where are you going?
Well, clearly, as you say, things have moved on drastically. Veronica, through tragedy, perhaps I should say, without giving too much away, leaves, well, divorces her husband, which was unusual in those days, but it was an agreeable divorce. Obviously, this has happened, and Veronica's moved into a new apartment. She is still very friendly with her husband, but things tore them apart, through no fault of their own. And it reminded Veronica of her lover when she lived in Scotland on the estate, which is mentioned earlier in the book. And it reminds her of Robert, and she writes to him out of desperation, really, because they've gone through a very sad time. And she writes to him, and he doesn't reply. And she thinks, well, either he's married, or he doesn't want to know her anymore. So she has no idea what's happening. And so I introduce Robert. I didn't want to go, maybe not giving too much away, but the readers will find that I haven't gone down the usual route of her, the lover arrives and they meet up and they live happily ever after. Things don't quite work out like that. But he was also very keen horseman, and he was and a jockey, and he was in connection with the Grand National back in that year. And you'll find that I popped that in the book because it was so fascinating when I did the research that it told me about the Grand National being ridden in March in terrible weather, terrible snowy conditions. And the horse that won, actually, it's the groom had actually packed butter into its hooves so that the snow wouldn't clog. Yes, I know, it's amazing. So that the snow wouldn't clog the horse's hooves, and it beat the favourite and won. And he admitted what he'd done afterwards. It wasn't breaking the rules. It was just he thought that it would help. And it was such a fascinating read when I came across it. I thought, I must put that in. Obviously, with Rose and with Agnes, both have now married, and Rose is now Thomas's wife. And as you say, she's had her son. Now, I must point out that the other two children actually have become her mama. She is mama to the other children now. They wanted her to call them mama, and they look upon her because they were very young at the time. So in a way, she has had her third child. And Agnes was pregnant more or less at the same time. They met up weekly in a coffee shop. I must stress that over the years, it was decided that the best way for them to keep in touch was to meet once a week in the coffee shop at the Royal Theatre, and that's what they did, and that's how they discovered that they were both pregnant at the same time, and both had healthy children, and at that time when Rose had the children, it was a very severe weather in New York. It snowed very heavily. The charity, although Rose was laid up having given birth, the other ladies from the charity were very busy trying to get food out, blankets out, especially to the migrants and to those in the homeless areas, in the tenement buildings and all that sort of thing. Some were freezing to death, and so they tried to get food out to them. So I've tried to get that across as well. Although there was this joy and this happiness, on the other side of things, on the other side of the coin, as they say, other people were struggling and desperately trying to survive in a very severe winter.
And yes, winters in New York can be very, very cold, everybody. And I just have to throw this one in. The coffee shop for Veronica is Macy's department store. I just
Oh,
love
yes, of
that.
course.
That's
Oh, yes, of course.
Veronica's.
Yeah. Well, nothing but the best for Veronica,
Nothing but the
bless
best for Veronica. Oh, no. Yes. Macy's department store for coffee. Yes. Now, let's shimmy on down the book here, Linda, and let's head off to chapters 44 and 45. For the subject matter within these two chapters is fascinating. And in chapter 44, it's spring 1905, America celebrated Theodore Roosevelt's second term of office. You talk about the inaugural parade, attended by hundreds of Native Americans, Chief Geronimo from the Apache people, cowboys, soldiers, students. Veronica's wedding at the Casino Royale dance hall. Way hey, everybody.
Yes.
To a Willem, Frank Lander, Friedlander. We have the explosion of the Grover's shoe factory on the Fifth Avenue. Catrian, a journalist, appears on the scene. This is a new character, everybody. And Marie, Dragon of the Print. I love this story. Where are you taking this here? What's the gossip? Come on, spill the beans.
Well, Veronica, obviously, as they read through, does marry. Willem arrives from...
somewhere.
Yes, and I just can't spring it to mind. From Austria in that area. But he actually works for Tiffany's, but it's the Tiffany jewellery.
Ooh.
He's a jeweller, but a very honest jeweller. But he is a jeweller, and he works for Tiffany. And yes, clearly their friendship over time develops. He has a daughter, Catriane, and Catriane is, she's very forceless, Catriane. She's like her father. She knows what she wants, and she goes for it. And the one thing that her, his daughter wanted to be was a newsagent to work for the papers. And she takes herself off and goes to the New York Times and introduces herself to Mattingly. She was the very first reporter of the New York Times, was Marie Mattingly. And she took Rose on, knowing that she had quite a bit of backbone, and got something for her. So, yes, obviously the story has moved on. Love has found again, and which is nice for Veronica, because she did go through a very hard time. So I wanted her to have some joy in her life. It wasn't fair to leave her, you know, sadness all the time. So she had found love. She's found joy. And as I say, Catriane is also... has found this work at the newspapers. And while I was researching Marie Mattingly, I came across the Grover's shoe factory explosion, which was quite fascinating to read. And Catriane was sent off to do an article because she put things into the ladies' magazine. She wanted to do more than that. But at the time, she was still doing information for the magazine. So Marie sent her off, and she arrived. And this shoe factory was literally just to the ground. It was rubble. And climbing, crawling out of this rubble was a young woman that Catriane went to rescue and made sure that she was all right. And after treatment, she made sure she got home all right. And it was obvious that this young girl said, "You're a reporter, really, aren't you?" And she said, "Yes, sure. Will you make me famous?" And she said, "I want to know the story from you as a person, what life was like at the Grover Shoe Factory." And so she goes on to tell her, and to tell her the morning of the explosion, you know, that she was working on this upper floor and suddenly there was this enormous explosion. And she found herself falling through these floors till she landed at the bottom with her own blummy machine on top of her, which really is what saved her. Catriane goes back and she writes a very good article. But what she also does is she gets in touch with Veronica, because these ladies that were left without husbands because they were killed. Some of them were rather, although unfortunately, but they were rather glad that the husbands hadn't survived, those that had been bullies and things like that. And it left the wives free. But of course, it took out when the factory exploded. It wasn't only the factory, but it took out the houses in that row, which is where a lot of the workers lived. So of course they'd lost their home and everything. So once again, the charitable organisation kicked into gear and found them other accommodation, equipped them out, got them clothes and things like that. But Catherine thought of that. And also, a new law was brought out that such an incident would never happen again because it was carelessness that had caused the explosion. I won't say exactly what because they'll read it, but it was carelessness and greed that caused the explosion.
It
So
was.
I wanted, yes, so
It
I
was.
wanted, it was, wasn't
The owner should
it?
have left things alone, saying no more.
Exactly.
He should have
Yes,
left things
yes.
alone. This part of the book, everybody, is full of tension. There's romance, there's vitality, there's poverty. There's a lot going on in this part of the book. And this is why I've thoroughly enjoyed it. Now, I want to go to the last chapters that we're going to go to in a little bit. And there's chapters 55 and 56. As I said, there are 65 chapters. And as you can see, we'd be here all day if we talked about all of them. So we're just going to go now to 55 and 56. And this is, we've got Katrin, she's a journalist. And she's been invited on to, with a photographer, onto this beautiful boat that is the RMS Lusitania. And of course, Lusitania is a historic boat. And she's been invited on to explore what this boat is about. And again, it's also about the work of the YWCA because they know when certain boats come in, well, they're going to be all right, those people. But it's when the migrant boats come in, that's when they've got the problems. And that's when Veronica and her team need to act. But talk us through here a little bit about Catriona and the boat, the Lusitania.
Oh, yeah, yes. Well, once again, this was a lot of research that was being done. And I came across the Lusitania. And as you say, Catherine was asked to go and write about it and look around the boat. And it was wonderful to read. And also I describe the luxury of the boat. And even those in third class, it was still luxury compared to how an awful lot travelled, of the migrants travelled, to New York. This was very different. And they got introduced to Stanley Leith. Now, Stanley Leith, as we know, was part of the Titanic in a few years'
Let me
time.
stop you there. The Lusitania and the Titanic are not sister ships.
No.
People think they are because they have got the most famous stories to them about the sinkings of them. They
Yes.
are not sister ships because the Titanic was from the White Star organization,
Yes.
and the Lusitania was Cunard.
Yes, two different ships altogether, although everyone up for some reason always seemed to think that they were connected,
They're
and they
not.
weren't. No. But Stanley Leave, we could say he's connected in so much as he introduced them to the Marconi radio, or he worked the Marconi radio. And it was one of the first ones to be fitted into the Lusitania ship, or fitted into the ship of the Lusitania. And he worked it, and he loved his Marconi. He couldn't talk enough about it. He introduced Catriann to it, and while they were moored up, he actually sent Catriann wanted a telegram to be sent home to let them know that she was on board the Lusitania, and he very kindly did just a short one because they weren't supposed to, and so he did that for them. But she remembered Guy, which was her photographer, and so she dropped. She went, "Oh, I can't do any more." So she said, "Well, I'm bound to remember to mention your name in the report." So he sent another one, Guy, bless him, to his mother, which was a huge treat in those days. But I describe the Lusitania in quite detail because it was, I think people would like to know what she was really like and how she was designed and that sort of thing. So I hope they don't find it boring. I'm sure they won't because I take them through, the dining rooms and the suites and all that sort of thing and explain how the design and all that. And I think they will find that quite fascinating.
It's very fascinating because the sister ship was the Mauritania. There
Yes.
you go, everyone.
Yes.
Now, Linda, this is a fascinating book. And as you can see, everybody, it's gripping with facts, information, all wrapped up in a story of romance, tension, New York ganglands, the underworld there. It is absolutely brimming with excitement and tension. It's a fabulous book. I've got one more question on
Sorry, it is
book.
an historical book, of
It
course.
is a historical book,
Yes,
yes.
yes.
How did you enjoy creating the characters?
I did. They just appeared. Sometimes when you're writing, a character will pop into your head. But also some of the characters, such as Paul Kelly and Eastman and all those, and the Wyos, which were the gangs, they came through research. And because of their names, I felt I must include them in the book because they were such fascinating characters. There is also another character which we've not mentioned, so I won't mention her. The readers will come across her, but she's also a very fascinating person. And although she's not very nice, you somehow warm to her. I don't know why, but a lot of my readers, those that have chatted to me after they read the book, she's one of the names that pops up. And they say, we love her. She's so bad, but we love her. So
So,
it's teasing.
you need to find out about that character, which we have deliberately hid because we want you to go and have a look at the book and find her.
Yes.
Now, Linda, so you've written this book. What's coming next?
Well, I am on my way through the second book, which picks up in 1912. And it picks up in April 1912. So without giving much away, there is a certain event in 19 in April 1912 in New York. Yeah. And that draws Thomas, and it involves Thomas quite a lot because of Maces. And also it involves Rose. And I move them on. Lucas now is the eldest son, has joined the American Royal Navy through, yes, because he went to see the inaugural I'm forgetting my the Navy fleet. It was called the Great White Fleet that
It
was
was
sent
called the
out.
Great White Fleet, and it was the
Yeah.
fleet that Theodore Roosevelt sent around the world as
Yes.
a friendship, as that means of friendship to countries. So,
Yes.
yeah, so when do you think you're going to get this next book out?
Well, I'm hoping early summer, late summer, but I have had hints that it's time this book was getting finished.
The characters are going, get on with it.
Yes, which is easier said than done. Obviously in the new book, I bring in some more new characters, which are quite sort of fascinating. And also my original characters are in there. So I'm hoping that when they come to read the second book, they will follow the life of Rose and her family and all the other characters as they move further on.
Okay, so who have you written this book for? Who would you like to see reading your book? Women? Men? Who?
Well, both. I mean, yes, some have told me that it is a little bit of a love story. It is, but not completely. It isn't just around Rose and her love story. So it is for all generations, really. And I have had one or two gentlemen that have read it and they've loved it because it does have quite gritty moments in it. They like the life of Rose, how she's developed her life and how she's matured and become a young woman in her own right.
Yeah.
And yes, so really it's any generation. Yes, I've had young people read it and the older generation. And as I say, I have had one or two gentlemen that have read it and have actually told me how much they have enjoyed the book. And please, when is the next one? I said, I'm getting there.
And I have to say, I've enjoyed looking at it. And I think if you look on Amazon, they file it under historical fiction, everyone. So it is romance, it's a thriller, it's adventure, it's historical facts. It's a whole raft of storylines that have made this brilliant, brilliant book. And it is wonderfully, wonderfully written by Linda Dukes. So go and have a look at her webpage and... You know, the books can be bought on Amazon and all the usual places. Just go and have a look at it. Give her a read, everybody, because it's a thoroughly, thoroughly amazing book. So all I'm left to say is, Linda Dukes, thank you very much for coming on my show. And I hope to get the opportunity to talk to you about the next book. We'll see.
Yes, thank you. And thank you for having me.
Oh, you're welcome. I'm JT Crowley. Thanks for listening wherever you are in the world. Until next time, stay safe.